Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Liney Vienna Suite podcast. My name's Chris, and tonight I'm joined by James and Lee. Lee, you all right, mate?
Yeah, very good, pal. You know, apart from the result today, and still looking forward positively to the Wigan game, and yeah, just excited for the rest of the season, really. Yeah,
fantastic. We'll cover all those points as we crack on. Sneak preview of the content of tonight's episode, though, guys. James, how you doing, mate? All well with you?
Yeah, no, I've been not too bad with me. Had a quite a busy September. October's calmed down quite a bit now, so I'm in good stead, my friend. I'm in good stead.
Pleased to hear it. Well, I'm thanking you all very much for your presence tonight. It is much appreciated. So, without further ado, we'll dive straight in. We've got a few bits and bobs to catch up on at various levels of significance. So, back when we last spoke, I believe was around the time we had a disappointing Rotherham result, which feels like a million years ago now. We lost 2-0. At home on a family fun day that wasn't much fun by the time the 90th minute rolled around. Without wanting to dwell on the game too much, the most interesting thing that came out of Wanderers World that week for me was the fact that the club had decided to cut all ties with betting at the stadium, which prompted the usual nonsense online from various parties not connected with Wanderers. But from my perspective, I think that's a really positive thing. I have a bet on my phone from time to time, but the fact that the Wanderers can offer the stadium as a safe space for anybody that perhaps has an issue with it, I think that can only be a good thing. Lee, what do you think, mate?
Yeah, it was a bit of a bolt from the blue, really, wasn't it? Because it wasn't really, I suppose, well, I don't know why you would ever get wind of them thinking about it until they've actually done it, but it just didn't seem to be anything that had been on any sort of agenda, really. But yeah, I've not really got any major feelings to it one way or another, to be honest. I mean, like you say, you can bet on your phone, can't you? So, like, you know, it's a long time since I, you know, put anything on the concourse, mainly because I'm always running to the game and at the last minute, you know, pretty much. So, and I never would have time. But, yeah, I mean, if it discourages, like, maybe a few kids from having a bet and starting down a slippery slope and perhaps putting too much money on it, or maybe getting paid on a Friday in cash, although that sort of world has probably gone, hasn't it? But, you know, like taking a wad of cash to the game and then tempted to put 20 quid on a first goal score, that's never going to happen, then fair enough, yeah. But, I mean, realistically, like I say, you can do it on your phone, and I don't think it's going to really make any major difference one way or another, to be honest. Just one of those, like some people, I think Darren McAntony said in his Hard Truth podcast, you know, he called it virtue signalling a little bit, and then he made a stupid comment about why didn't they do it when they were in administration? Well, because they're different owners.
Yeah, it's all perfectly fair points. It's weird how virtue signalling now becomes a sort of watchword for doing something positive. So yeah. maybe at that point we'll move on. Wanderers then travelled up on the 25th to Sunderland, a fixture that doesn't have very fond memories for myself, but we lost 1-0. James, to hark back couple of weeks now to the end of September, going into that game, what were you thinking? Because obviously we'd had a decent form, we'd battered Ipswich, we'd lost against Cambridge, and obviously we'd lost also against Rotherham in short spell. Sunderland are always a tricky opponent, you know, the stature of the stadium especially is one that is intimidating at this level, but we were expecting a bit more than we got, do you think?
Well, from all accounts that I've heard, the Sunderland performance actually wasn't too bad overall. I mean, they're up there for a reason now, Sunderland. Lee Johnson's got them playing a newer style, not that newer compared to Parky, but probably has a bit less pragmatism about it and a bit more flair. But yeah, and they seem to be benefiting from it. So yeah, they're probably going to, unlike past seasons, they probably will. I can easily see them in automatic promotion this season. I don't know. I don't know too much about the game as a whole because I didn't go, because why the hell would I want to travel to Sunderland? But, yeah, but from all accounts, it doesn't seem too bad a game. And losing to Sunderland at this level is no real great shame, especially if we tried as hard as we did. And thankfully, it's not cost us too much in the long run. I think at the time we only dropped like maybe two places off, and we more than made up for it in the following game. So So a tough one to take, but hopefully we can do the same to them when they come visit our ground next year.
Definitely, and Lee, James alluded to there the game that was to follow, which is just a couple of nights later on the Tuesday, down in London, away at Charlton, a game that was held at the same time as the City PSG game. I confess, I flitted between the two for the first half, but wow, certainly didn't see that second half coming.
Yeah, I have my full attention. That's shameful, that Chris, watching money laundered game, probably whatever you call it. But yeah, we were dire for the first sort of 25, maybe even 35 minutes of the game, and I didn't really have a lot of hope for it, and we didn't really like scoring, in my opinion, until we did do through Dapo, obviously. I think they were just getting in behind. Lecco was causing Declan John a lot of problems down there, right in our left, and we were just, they weren't sort of dominating us, but we were just well off it, I thought, in the first, at least first half an hour anyway. And yeah, but obviously their heads dropped. So, as they always say, the old adage, great time to score just before half time. Their manager goes into the changing room, players probably heads down a little bit, wondering what's going to happen next because they've not been in good form. And then, yeah, I mean, it took a while for us to get the second. It was in the balance of the game, really. I think there was one minute where we had a good chance, can't remember exactly who it was, and they broke on the other end and sort of just hit the angle of post and bar with a shot from sort of just outside the edge of the area. And I thought that was going to be, you know, it looked very much in the balance, but as soon as Kieran Lee got a second, we really took control. And yeah, it was in the end, it was like a 4-1 that wasn't really a 4-1, but we just sort of ran away with it towards the end of the game. We looked a bit superior fitness-wise to them, and certainly confidence-wise by the end. And yeah, obviously it was a good night's work, wasn't it?
It definitely was, James. I don't know about you, but away games, Wanderers, I think it just must be hardwiring me to expect we're going to lose. Because we had, even in the Premier League years, we were very unreliable when it came to away performances. But Lee's just mentioned there, the last 20, 25 minutes, I mean, Lee scored his first goal at Lee Place of Wanderers, by the way, not our present Lee here tonight, in the 73rd minute. And so within 16, 17 minutes, we popped another couple on and we won 4-1 in the end. I think that do you think that ability to perform well away from home is linked perhaps to the way that Everett wants to play on the counter? Or do you think that perhaps the makeup of our team and the personnel we've got in there is better sort of, what's the word I'm looking for, better suited to sometimes perhaps playing away from home?
I'd certainly say it probably sets up better to playing away from home because most of the teams that we'll face at the home ground will prefer to keep possession of the ball. We kind of saw that from Charlton, although they got a bit wasteful in the second half. But more often than not, we've seen it like when teams come to our ground, like Burton and whatnot, they'll come and just try to hold the line, keep us off their backs as much as they can, which, especially considering how wasteful we can be sometimes in and around the penalty box, the fact that they can stop us from even getting in there in those certain home games is really going to prove disadvantageous for us. You'd be relying on another Darpo screamer if he could even get that off, considering he's got about three men in front of the goal for him to try those long efforts. Yeah, no, it's definitely more suited to playing away from home. I mean, for God's sake, we got three goals against Wimbledon away from home. We got four against Charlton. We've got five against Ipswich. That's more than half our goals in just those three games.
Yeah,
it just shows how much better it's suited for us to play away. It's not always going to pan out. It didn't pan out versus Sheffield Wednesday. It didn't pan out versus Cambridge. But more often than not, away from home, I'm feeling a lot better these days, especially when I can actually watch it. I follow may have been the bane of my existence last season, but I'm slightly grateful that it, despite how crap it is, they'll still at least let me watch the away midweek games, which is nice. So I don't miss out on fantastic performances like we had against Charlton.
Yeah, fair point. It is certainly not ideal, is it? But hey, 3 points are 3 points, and it was a cracking result. Lee, just to touch on something there that James mentioned, do you think that when we do have a game like Ipswich, like Charlton, where the onus is on the home team to be on the front foot, it is something that we can tap into? Because it feels to me that whilst watching us away from home, we've seen a different team comparative to how we play when we're playing at home. I think, but a couple of games, obviously, like the Shrewsbury one that we'll come to shortly, where we were on the front foot for the first sort of half an hour, we looked really good. But it sounds a bit harsh to say, given where we are in the league, but I don't think our home performances have been that impressive this season.
Yeah, I think James is right in that when we go away from home, there's certainly less pressure on us as such. We're not considered a big gun in the division, even though historically we've put, probably one of the top two, three teams in the league in terms of our history. But certainly we sort of come into the season a little bit under the radar in that sense that teams, aren't going to be giving us, I suppose respect and expecting us to sort of dominate the game. Although, we have, as well, Everett's to be believed, we've dominated every single game that he's ever been in charge of at Wanderers. But, he's got a point, that we really should be finishing our chances. And, like, we certainly make a lot of chances away from them. I think probably if you look at the Burton game, obviously we should have certainly won that game. The MK Dons' first game of the season was the strange one. There was a lot of goals, but not an awful lot of other chances apart from the goals. And that was a bit of a strange game, that one. It's couldn't really explain it as to how I ended up. But I think the performances home and away have been fairly consistent. It's just that Burton, clung on for dear life at the point. Rotherham came with a good game plan and scored two very quick goals that sort of pretty much put the game to bed in a sense, even though we did have a lot of chances to get one back before half time. So I think obviously our most impressive performances have been away from home, and we're certainly more impressive results at Charlton, Ipswich, and we're 3-1 up at Wimbledon as well, AFC Wimbledon. So really, we should be looking at, I think we were top of the away league table going into Saturday. Obviously, we played a couple more games away from home than some teams because we played. I think we've played one more away than at home. I think
Yeah, it was true.
we play seven away and five at home at the moment. Play 12, haven't we? So, we've got a little bit of catching up to do in that sense. But yeah, I mean, Shrewsbury was, we started very well. We certainly had a sort of 15-minute, 10 to 15-minute spell where we looked fantastic, and then it sort of dropped off, didn't it? Fizzled out somewhat. So yeah, the games I've seen away from them, I mean, fortunately, I've not seen the full game of any of these wins apart from Charlton and Lincoln. I mean, Lincoln wasn't the full game anyway because I thought I botched up for half an hour of it. So, I've not really seen us. I'd have loved to have seen the Ipswich game. That's a good of them because I decided not to because I was away then in Mallorca, so I could have actually watched it. I decided that I wasn't going to jinx us, and of course with 4-1 half an hour. So I've not actually been able to sort of study the game as a whole. Obviously, just looking at highlights, I mean, I've seen extensive highlights of most of them. Didn't really bother looking to this. Didn't really bother looking at the Sunderland game in massive sort of detail, to be honest. So just again, or Wednesday, I've not really had a chance to. But I think overall, like you say, away from home, we've just got that little bit less pressure on us, a little bit more of an onus on the home team to attack, and it gives us that bit more space, but. I suppose the big question at the moment, isn't it, is when we score, we tend to score sort of threes, fours, flat, even fives. But if we don't, we're going plenty of games now where we've not scored. I think we've not scored in half of our games now. So that's a big worry. That we if we don't seem to get off the mark, we really struggle to even put one on the board. And I think we all know why that's the case.
It is, and we'll certainly come to that in a bit. It's interesting points, but you mentioned the Shrewsbury game, two cracking goals for Wanderers there. We won't dwell on the game too much because there's plenty of other stuff to talk about. But James, you can be the official arbiter of which goal was better in Shrewsbury. We've got Sarsavic's 25-yard screamer or Dapo's 20 and a bit yard daisy cutter. Which one was your preference?
Oof. I mean, I appreciate all of Darpo's endeavour to beat a couple men before his shot compared to the amount of space that that Sarris had right before his shot, but I don't know why, but just Sarris's curve shot, it just looked a lot more impressive to me. Top, you know, top right bins, both from similar positions, but I don't know. I kind of just expect it from Darpo now because he scored about half his goals from that position. So to see it from Sarcevic, I don't know. It just stuck out more to me in that sense.
He needs to do a bit more of that, doesn't he, Sarcevic? He's obviously got the technical ability, and granted, he had all the time in the world to run forward and pick his spot, but it was fantastic. Where I sit in these lowers, right behind both goals, a fantastic view, and you could see both were going in from the moment that they both let fly. With regard to the captain, obviously, he seems to be, not, I think polarising is probably too strong a word for it. He's got his staunch defenders. He's also got a few of those in the fan base who think that he maybe needs to buck his ideas up a little bit. Which side of the fence do you sit on?
The side of the fence I sit on is the one with splinters up my ass, because I can't make up my mind about him. I kind of have the same feelings that I know a fair few other fans have. Like when he's not in a game, it really does feel like he's missing. But when he turns it on, he's one of the biggest presences on the field, and it's so frustrating that we can't see that more consistently. Like when he's on form, you can see that he leads by example, but we've just not seen it enough. I was hoping to see more of it this season with the momentum riding from it, but it's just not happened for him yet for whatever reason, except apart from a couple games. It's easy to see why he's... I know you didn't want to use the word polarising, but I'd certainly use that word polarising amongst certain sections of the fan base. But at the end of the day, he is captain, and one of those staunch defenders is Ian Evatt. He's clearly come out for both him and another polarising player that I'm sure you'll talk about later in Owen Doyle, has come out to defend their consistent inclusion in the starting 11. So hopefully in more games down the line, that kind of faith will be justified. But for now, right now in my mind, I can't settle on either side of the debate at the moment.
Fair enough. Lee, I know you and I have spoken in the past about maybe how Sarcevic is perhaps a more important on the pitch as a captain than sometimes as a contributor in midfield. But where would you play him in terms of the midfield? Would you have him more advanced? Do you think he needs to sit, and then his sort of lack of physicality would be less of an issue? But if you were in the manager's shoes, whereabouts would you have Sarcevic sitting?
I wrote a little bit about starting the player ratings after Shrew. Was it after Shrew? Yeah, it will have been. And obviously, you know, probably one of his best ones of the season, because he impacted on the result with a great goal, obviously. And I think I'd have him... I've had a bit of... I can't remember who I had the debate with, but, you know, I think in our formation, the number 10, which is the role he's, you know, supposed to sort of have, I think that's like a really pivotal position in the team. But a lot of people who I've spoken to think he plays more of like a, what you call like a 3-8, like, I suppose, with a bit less defensive responsibility than either Sheehan or Kieran Lee, but also having, you know, the freedom to get forward. But I just think we need a more sort of creative player in there, really. What he does, I mean, he's, like I say, my first comparison that I gave him, and I think it was the Forest Green game. I'd seen him against Bradford, and then after about half an hour of the Forest Green game, I'm like, he's very much like Kevin Nolan, where he works hard. He definitely does work hard. I've no qualms with the way he works off the ball. I think he works really hard, but he's also can get bypassed by someone with a better pace. They can just breeze past him. Certainly towards the end of games, he struggles to sort of keep up the acceleration when trying to track players who come from deep. But he's, like I say, if he isn't scoring a goal, he doesn't offer enough in general play, I don't think, to warrant even a place in the team for me. But the fact he has got that goal scoring ability. I mean, he's got three this season, but that's pretty good in League One. Let's hope he turns up against the other former clubs, because obviously he had a bit of an unhappy short spell at Shrewsbury. And then obviously we've got Plymouth and Plymouth on Tuesday, a week today. And we've got Fleetwood coming up not too long ago. So hopefully if he can turn up against Shrewsbury, he'll turn up against them too as well, he used to play for. But it's a difficult one, like James said. He is kind of polarising. I think he's got his uses. And I'm happy to have him around. He doesn't seem like a bad egg or anything. He obviously had a bit of a moan, I think, to Mark Isles in an interview about some of the fans getting on his back and stuff, but which is like maybe a little bit thin-skinned, because I don't think there's lots of fans giving him a lot of grief. I think they're just sort of questioning whether he's really good enough to be in our first 11. But, you know, him and Doyle were marquee signings in League 2. They were called marquee signings for a reason. They were in League 2. In League 1, he's never really done it. Maybe had a little spell at Plymouth where he was doing okay, but I think if we're going to progress as a club, we're going to have to move on from a player of his sort of ilk who's can come up with the goods, you know, pretty infrequently, really. It's not often enough that he scores a goal like that. I mean, that's the best goal he scored for us by a long stretch. I mean, Crawley was a good finish, a good run. Obviously, a very important goal at Crawley as well, but. He's someone who I think I understand why he's playing, but I think the position Everett's playing him is probably the right one. Maybe if we had someone a bit more physical up front with than Doyle, and somebody who, maybe Bakayoko or someone else who's got a little bit more to them athletically in the game, then maybe he could play a bit closer to them to get knockdowns. But just not the way he plays it. Looking for
knockdown. No, if I might interrupt, Lee.
I've gone on too long anyway, James.
Yeah,
God, please.
No, I was just about to say, I kind of agree, just maybe as a trial period, I would like to see Lee Sheehan and MJ Williams as a three-man midfield partnership. Kieran Lee, especially in recent games, I'll be honest. At the end of last season, I thought he was good for us. I just didn't think he was as outstanding as some other people made him out. But this season, I'm starting to see why a lot more Sheffield Wednesday fans were starting to rave about him. The games he started in this season, he's been absolutely tremendous for the most part. So
yeah, I think you're right in that sense with Lee. I think I think League Two is a bit too much of a clogger league for him to stand out. Whereas the teams in this league, they're not going down. I mean, Wickham and Gillingham and you know, possibly a couple more down the bottom might go a lot more direct, but I think every game is more and more a game of football, and he stands out because he's a really good footballer. His touch is golden, as this Jeff Wednesday fans used to say, and I think you're totally right. I think it suits him better in a higher league, definitely.
I think you both made some excellent points there. I think for my own sake, to hark back to your comment, Lee, about the social media side of things, I think that was a bit unfair, Sarcevic, to have a bit of a whinge like that online. I mean, the comments that I read, it wasn't exactly like, you know, your shit, lol, kind of thing. It was all quite considered and quite, you know, thoughtful. It's not just your sort of usual online whinging. But that's beside the point. I think Sarcevic at the moment has got a place in there. I think Williams and Lee are undroppable. But I think I'm on the same lines as you, James. I think the inclusion of Sheehan in the away games, especially where we need to have a bit more control and not quite as one way or the other, a Sars, which can be, would only be a good thing. That brings us on neatly to Saturday, Sheffield Wednesday away. So Wanderers obviously went there having a couple of decent results. We beat Liverpool 2 in that daft midweek cup that we won't even bother sticking on because I don't think anyone really paid too much attention to that.
But Wanderers are right. That game, I feel bad now.
let never be said that we're not adaptable. So what did you think of it? I mean, other than Nat Phillips, I didn't have a flipping clue anyone else was.
I'm with you on that, but mate, I didn't have a single clue. I was surprised seeing Nat Phillips there, to be honest. But
I think he must have put his hand up to say, "I'll play." But how was it as a spectacle? It was, you know, for a sort of glorified reserve team match. What was the atmosphere like?
Well, I felt like I was back in the days of IFOR because I could hear Matt Jukes for 90% of the game. I know how you feel about that, but but outside of that, I don't. Outside of when Bakayoko came on for the second half, I don't think anyone was outstanding. But then again, you're playing Liverpool's academy kids, and for some reason, a guy who played 20 Premier League games last season. So, yeah, it's not exactly the biggest accomplishment to scream about, but at least it wasn't as bad as it was against Wigan in the cup matches. I mean, so we'll just have to play this kind of joke team, and hopefully we can do it again against Rochdale. But outside of that, I can see why most of the reserve players are reserves.
Okay. I mean, was Comley any good? Because he's one that I feel like, given the fact that we kind of signed him, played him, wrote him off, in the, we'll call it the I Follow era, without fans there to see him in person, I feel a little bit sad for him that he's been, you know, he's been consigned to the scrap heap, and we've not even seen him play, not in the flesh, not till the Liverpool game anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's kind of hard to judge because, like you say, it's just the manner of opposition. You can't really take it too seriously from that perspective. But if we're just being completely unbiased without that being a thing, I'd say he wasn't too bad, if I'm totally honest. No, nothing amazing, okay. but he's kind of like what we expected when we first signed him. You know, just a nice guy to stick over the ball, not really lose it, pass it about and keep the kind of flow going, get him where he needs to without being a big MJ Williams type brute. Yeah, no, he did fine. And certainly didn't seem to warrant, you know, not being included in the registration for being able to play in the League One campaign or any of the other cup matches. So, seemed a bit harsh from that perspective, but outside of that, he wasn't too bad. The rest of the midfield, none of them were too bad. Defence, Ameson and Baptiste looked all right. Like I was saying, there was no real standouts apart from Bakayoko when he came on, but, you know, we're going to need those players. Hopefully they'll pick up the level, especially Brockbank, who will likely play against Wigan, with Jones being suspended for that game. So, hopefully these kind of games can give them what they need, give them the step up, and nothing really more to say. Not an outstanding game, but it was just nice to see some of the lads that you don't usually get to see play pretty well for the most part.
Excellent. Well, I mean, it's one of those things, isn't it? We'll decry the tournament until we get to Wembley. Then, lads, I'll see you all on the bus on the way down. Not gonna miss anything like that if it came to pass. But on to Sheffield Wednesday in that case. So, like I said, Wednesday doing all right in the league, but no great shakes. Barry Bannon being the sort of main focus of their team, at least from my perspective. Wanderers lined up with Dixon, Jones, Santos, Johnston and John in a very, very easy to read out back four. Williams and Lee sat behind Kachunga, Sarcevic, Efelayan and Doyle up top. So, well, in terms of the game itself, Wanderers seemed to start all right. We had a hell of a lot of the ball, and we were doing all the pressing, at least in the first 20-25 minutes. A couple of missed chances that maybe we'll focus on in a moment or two, but it solidified, at least for me, watching the game, how, I feel sad to say it because it is a catchy tune, but Lee Kachunga's rubbish. He's rubbish. At the moment, there's nothing to suggest that he's ever played in the Premier League other than looking at his Wikipedia page. Is growth over him every time for me. Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, as soon as I saw that he was playing on the right, I'm not completely averse to giving him a run instead of Doyle. Although I don't think, I mean, a record, I think he scored in his last 40 games, so that says an awful lot. Do I have a lot of? Oh, no, not quite. But Kachunga, yeah, I mean, a lot of those were sub at Sheffield Wednesday. Second half last season, he was pretty much exclusively sub there. So, in a struggling side. So, there's caveats to that. But his first few contributions were pretty telling, pretty decent. He cut that ball back, although it was easy enough to do for... Was it Baptiste's goal, wasn't it, on the first day of the season? It was in the building by then, wasn't it? That was definitely him.
Yeah, no, yeah, he set it up for Baptiste, and so far that's his only real contribution.
Well, he played like a really nice calm pass into Sarcevic for the goal against Lincoln as well. when he came out. I was at that point, I was quite enthused by how like composed he is. I think he's quite neat and tidy. I think against Shrewsbury, he was neat and tidy, but he never looked. It just didn't look that impactful. He kind of played it fairly safe, and everything was kind of obvious what he did. There was nothing really where I thought he's got something that's going to trouble a defence, but. I'm not so down on him at this stage. I don't think he's been that bad, but then again, I didn't watch the Sunderland game. But I certainly was hoping his goal would come back in, but not away from home even more so. I think he's actually stepped up his level in general play this season, his goal and his play. I know he's not scored, or I can't react to him like an assist or anything, but I think he looks bright and dangerous when he plays. And obviously his work rate is outstanding. I think his defensive quality is far, far better than Katunga, despite Katunga being a man, he's, you know, better built man. He's more of a physical presence, shall we say, than Isgrove. Isgrove is quite a small guy, but Isgrove really uses his body well in pressing, and it's like the intelligence of his press as well. He sort of nicks the ball. I think he did it against Lincoln for the goal. Actually, Katunga set up for Sarcevic. He won the ball and made the keeper sort of, the keeper did a hurried clearance, and he actually nicked the ball off the guy on the touchline. So it was, I think Isgrove is certainly should start the next game ahead of Katunga. I just think it's probably a little bit early to stick the knife in and say he's absolutely useless at this level. I think there must be some merit in his signing, you know, something that Chris Markham, he obviously had him. He was at Huddersfield when he was there. He was obviously seen something in him that they couldn't sort of make some sort of impact in the team. But certainly, I think next game, I'd really like to see from three of Isgrove, Bakayoko, and Afolayan. You know, we're not scoring enough goals in enough games. You know, when we do score, we tend to score a few, as we've said. But not impacting the score sheet enough, and I think he needs to just switch it up and just give Doyle a rest. And
yeah,
Bakayoko's jumping at the bit, isn't he, in the day to get in the team. And I think Isgrove's the right option at the moment on the right, although, you know, hopefully Amici can perhaps show the sort of end product that Isgrove's perhaps missing overall. So yeah, in summing up, really, I think give him a bit more time, Katunga, but having said that, I want him out of the team for the next game.
This is where we differ. You see, you're too nice. It's not working, so let's get him out of the team. Let's not keep giving him chances. James, from your perspective, obviously Bakayoko did well against Liverpool, popped up with a couple of goals, including what I think is possibly the worst taken penalty in the history of professional football. But Doyle is struggling massively, isn't he? I mean, there's an argument, I think, with that chance in the first couple of minutes that the ball wasn't the greatest, but you'd still expect a centre forward of his experience and his previous record to have done that. I hate to say I told you so, but I remember us having a conversation in the summer about whether Doyle would cut it at this level. And similar to Sarcevic, I guess, there was a doubt whether he could, whether he ever has, and whether he will. And sadly, both seem to be borne out at this minute in time. Sarcevic, you can probably hide it a little bit given where he plays, but with the centre forward who doesn't score, or hasn't scored, I think I read somewhere he's not scored all in his last 12 games from open play, it's not enough to pop up with the odd penalty, is it? And given how Bakayoko played, do you see Everett breaking with the tradition of the last 18 months and dropping Doyle?
No. To that question, no, not a chance. Doyle, whenever he was fit, he always started in every game last season, despite, even when Miller was scoring goals off the bench, Doyle always started. He's tried and trusted to him. I mean, we've got him on a 3-year deal, and you know, I think he has been a decent goal scorer at this level. I don't know his record off by heart, and I can't be bothered looking up in the meantime. But
Sorry, James. I know it's roughly, surprisingly, it's about 1 in 2 in about 100 games. He's scored about 50. He's scored about late 40s or early 50s. So he's. It's pretty much 1 in 2. It's really surprising that he's done that well at this level. I always thought it was sort of League 2 that he thrived mainly, but think earlier in his career he's made got made most of those because he's been in League Two with us, Swindon and Bradford for the last.
It may blow your mind, boys. I did a modicum of research for this podcast, and you're right. When he played Chesterfield in 2014. He hit 21 league goals, and so that obviously is the majority of his output in that division. When he played for Oldham and Bradford, not quite as prolific. He scored sort of again 25 goals, but over three times as many matches. So. He maybe was a light that burned bright at the start of his time in League One, but it's diminished a little bit since then. But sorry, James, I didn't interrupt you there.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I'm glad I know that now. So maybe it's with Doyle. All the lad needs is a goal, but at the same time, he did miss some really good chances against Sheffield Wednesday, and there will eventually have to come a point where you say. You can't just sit with him and hope he'll score anymore. And he will have to come out the side. I don't think it's going to be against Wigan. I don't see him dropping him that soon. But, yeah, Doyle needs a goal, man. It's fine praising his work ethic and how he seems to be challenging defenders a bit more. He runs about quite a bit. And if any one of his teammates is further forward... he will drop further back to cover for them until they can return to their position. So I'm not going to fault him on that front, but at the end of the day, he's supposed to be a goal-scoring striker. And outside of, like you say, penalties and the first, I think he scored in the second game of the season, he's not really doing what's been said on the tin at the moment. And yeah... It's a tough one. It's a tough one because Bakayoko's never been a prolific striker either.
But... and that's the dilemma, isn't it? The fact that we're changing a player that we know and a player that we've relied on previously and hasn't let us down to any massive extent for a player whose grand total of goal output in League One is probably 10 goals, 15 goals maybe.
Yeah, and when you look at the other two potential options that could fill in there, Delfonso... Same problem, never really been a prolific goal scorer in his entire career, even when he has played regularly this level, like he did with Blackpool. And then Kachunga, the one guy in the team who probably needs a goal more than Owen Doyle. So it's not the greatest of options when it comes to trying to figure out our main problem of trying to put away more of the many chances that we create in the majority of games that we play. So, maybe if he got through his option that he was supposed to get in the transfer window, because we all know he was linked with a forward-thinking player at the end of the summer window, but it just never panned out. Maybe if we had that option, we wouldn't be talking about this right now. But the fact is, this is where we are, and Doyle at the moment is our best bet going forward. Probably to try and get a goal up front, but hopefully we can get that kind of solution sorted in the January window, because I'm not really favouring any of our options up top at the moment. Bakayoko maybe, but he's only just come back, and from what I heard, he didn't impact the game too much when he came on to play in the middle against Sheffield Wednesday, though I'd be happy for someone to correct me on that.
I'm of much the same opinion as you both, that we need something to change. And if Doyle can't be the one to force that change through his own performances, then he's halfway through what is probably the best contract of his career. He's not exactly going to be agitating for a move if he's dropped, or if he drops down the pecking order at all. So I think we are stuck with him, for want of a better word, for the time being. And I totally agree with you, James. I'd be gobsmacked if he doesn't line up at the start against Wigan on Saturday, but... I suppose we'll see very, very soon. Well, unfortunately for Wanderers, that the theme of missed chances continued throughout the game. I mean, I was amazed to see Berahino playing for Sheffield Wednesday. I'd completely forgotten about him. But he had a couple of efforts. Dixon made a good save. I think it was from Gregory, who we'll hear more about in a little bit. But then another couple of chances for Doyle. Wanderers just seemed to be dominating. And then it was entirely typical. I had texted my mate. I was watching it on the dodgy box. He was watching it on his dodgy box. We're 100% going to lose this game, aren't we? And so it was. With 25 minutes to go, Gregory scored for Wednesday. looking back at the goal, not knowing anything really about the build-up play because I was only half paying attention at the time, I thought Santos could have done a bit better, personally. It was a shame to see him have a bit of a wobble because I thought in the previous home game he was absolutely imperious against Shrewsbury. But, you know, players make mistakes. It's not the end of the world. Wanderers would dominate possession and shots with 61% of the ball and 12 shots, although only one on target, which perhaps echoes back to what we said previously. Wanderers couldn't find an equaliser, and the fans left with a bit of a rueful look on their faces, I would imagine. So, ahead of the Wigan game on Saturday, which we'll talk about shortly, it leaves us in 8th position after 12 games with 18 points, goal difference of plus 4. And that's only 5 points from the top 2. So it's been a really, really positive start. I was make no bones about it. I was concerned at the start of the season that we were maybe overestimating our chances. A lot of supporters who've clearly, you know, in hindsight, know a lot more than I do on about promotion. No names mentioned. But how have you seen the season exactly? I knew you were too modest to go in early. So
I had to.
Fair dues. So Lee, I'll come to you, and then James, come to you in a second as well. Rate our season so far. We are what? We're a quarter of the way through, approximately. How happy are you? Where do you think we can improve? And where do you think we might end up? Bear in mind, if your prediction is different than mine, I will be keeping all of this recording and playing it back to the end of the season.
I predict us to finish about 11th, and I think that's probably where we're going to end up, unless we have some sort of outstanding January where we bring in the striker we sort of clearly need and maybe another attacking midfield option. Certainly someone who can provide a bit of a spark, even if it's just from the bench, if he's adamant that he always plays Sarce and always plays Doyle. Just looking at the table now, there's a few teams below us who might sort of, I mean, the table is very condensed at this stage anyway. There's only 4 points between 12th and 6th. And there's teams below 12th, like Ipswich, and possibly Lincoln, although I'm less sure of them. But certainly Ipswich's squad is pretty stacked, and you've got to think eventually they're going to come good. But, you know, there's teams above us who I'd be fairly confident we'd finish it, but well, not actually that many. I would say Plymouth, but they're a good 5 points clear of us now, so you never know. But there's teams above us who I certainly think we're equal to, if not better than, in Oxford, and potentially I think we're going to run in a bit hot at the moment, but they've got 2 games in hand and they're already 4 points above us. So looking at sort of where we can realistically get to, I still think playoffs is a stretch. It just totally depends on what we can do in January, I think, and obviously trying to stay in touch and contention by then as well. The areas we can improve are fairly clear, aren't they? Obviously, we've scored a lot of goals overall, to be honest. We've scored 20 in 12 games, which is not mind-blowing, but it's pretty good, you know, a level we've stepped up at. But we're a bit Jekyll and Hyde, aren't we? Like you say, we score in big batches, and we're not scoring in the games that, you know, we don't need to score 5 at Ipswich and 4 at Charlton. 2 and 3 would have done, because we'd have won both games. You know, we need goals in each game, and I think the area of improvement would be up top. Have we got enough cover for other areas of the team? Probably centre mid, we should be fine, although Thomason's obviously untested at this level. He's not had a chance to, you know, go at League One yet, but obviously MJ's coming up to a definite suspension. There's no way he's going to go under 15 games without getting booked or whatever the amnesty is for 5 bookings, so he'll definitely have to miss a game. And with Tut injured, it's going to be either one of Comley or Thomason who comes in that
Comley
game.
Comley can't play.
Yeah, oh no, he can't, can he? Because he's not registered, is he? So, poor lad. But so obviously centre mid, we should be fine in theory. But, you know, it's just looking at other areas of the squad, it's the case of, I don't think we've got an awful lot of money in the bank. I'd be amazed if we pay a transfer fee. I think anything we do in January will be a loan. I don't think there's any free agents out there by January who are going to be worth looking at. No, I'm just going to talk early. So basically, that was a joke, but I never thought we could sign. So I think it's just, I think we'll probably finish about where I said we'll finish. I've not really changed my mind. I'm happy with how we're doing, but equally, I think we could be doing a lot better if the recruitment had just been that little bit more ambitious, or, you know, perhaps just on deadline day, you know, sounded like we're going to sign two, and obviously for deals to materialise, things need to fall into place, and perhaps we just got a bit unlucky. Everett was very specific in the player he wanted, whoever that was, and it just didn't fall into place. And in that case, sometimes you're just unlucky rather than unambitious. But I'd like to hopefully see, you know, maybe see FV put a bit of money in the pockets, and you never know where they could take us. But I think if you look at the squad as a whole, if we were to somehow make the playoffs and go to the Championship this year, I don't think we're anywhere near ready to play at that level. So it might not be the worst thing that we do finish mid-table and sort of build a bit slower.
Consolidation.
As sad as it sounds, and as unexciting as it sounds, perhaps it is a bit more realistic for us to have a season like that.
Yeah, some good points there, mate. I don't disagree. I think it would still be a season of success if we could end up in the top half. But, you know, I think other than the teams that probably populate the top six, top eight, maybe include someone like Wednesday, and then well, obviously you don't expect Ipswich and necessarily Charlton to be as disastrous through the rest of the season as they have been so far. But there's probably, you know, there's probably 8-10 decent teams in the league, and I think if we can be either the best of the rest or manage to improve in January with our recruitment to the point where we can break into that group, then who knows? But James, I assume you're already making plans for the Championship next season, knowing your inherent positivity.
Oh, I've already booked me Wembley Hotel, mate, for the playoff final.
Happy days.
But
it was free cancellation.
But yeah, reflecting on the season so far, I don't think it's too bad. Especially in comparison to how we started last season, we're giving ourselves definitely a better foothold to have a brilliant January window and surge up the table this time. It might happen again. Sometimes all it does take is like one or two players just to things to properly click to surge you up. We saw it a few points last season, and there's no reason it can't be done again this season, but that's looking a bit far ahead at the moment. Looking at how we've done so far, for the most part, I don't think it's too bad. I'd like to be higher, and we probably should be higher considering we got robbed at Burton, and we kind of got robbed at Wednesday from the ref, but who knows what would have happened there. I'm trying to remember all the games, but yeah, eighth with 18 points, positive goal difference, and even though we've played a few games more than teams ahead of us, they're not a million miles away, but both in terms of the automatic positions and the playoff positions. So yeah, I'm happy enough with how the season's gone so far. Just hopefully across the season we can work on some of the faults in our game that we pointed out, like how many chances we waste, which to be fair was a problem last season as well. The lack of proper cover in the forward lines, you know, just little things of that nature, and hopefully we can also sort out some of what seem to be defensive frailties. We can see far too many goals from that lacking, especially when many of them are avoidable. Like, for example, Sheffield Wednesday goal. I know you pointed out Santos being the problem, but for me, Declan John was the problem. His positioning for the ball to go over to their winger, I don't know why he was tucked in so close to Johnston, but he shouldn't have been anywhere near that close to him. It left it completely open for their winger, and yeah, just little fixes like that that you can hopefully work on as the season progresses. Yeah, I'm happy enough so far. I just beg that we improve and not just give away some of the sloppy stuff that we get on with. Otherwise, outside of that, there's nothing to fault. Work ethic's good. Team all linked with each other, and I'm happy enough with quite a few of our starting options, and even with some of our options off the bench. Just Just I hope we'll be higher. I hope we'll be higher. I know, and it probably would be smarter if we took a season to consolidate more and build stronger to hopefully challenge for automatic next season. But I like being ambitious. It's a foreign feeling to me as a Bolton fan.
There you go. Where's the fun in that?
Exactly.
Where's the fun in
exactly.
that?
Exactly. Let's at least reach the playoffs. So even if we get knocked out during that, we can at least say, you know what, we can make playoffs. We'll go be bloody champions next year.
Why not? You've got to have ambition, haven't you? I think you've just triggered my memory, and I can't believe I forgot to mention it during the Wednesday game, but I think something that we maybe do need to become a little bit better at is dealing with the referees in this division, because they are diabolical. The couple of issues that perhaps did send Wanderers fans home with the biggest frowns on their faces were the referee choices made by our friend Mr. Rock at weekend. Dapo was accused of diving and carded for it. They went straight up the other end and scored. So there's another tiny little sliding doors moment. Then at the end, I think we had a more than fair shout for a penalty in the dying seconds as Bannon, the ball hit Bannon on the thigh slash hand, depending on your allegiances in terms of Wednesday or Wanderers. But these are things that we have had a bit of luck from time to time, but perhaps we need to be a little bit more forceful. There were accusations last season that perhaps Wanderers were a little bit too nice in occasions when it came to playing the slightly snidier side of football. But that's splitting hairs. It's only a minor thing, and I'm sure that over the course of the season, as they say, these results will even themselves out. That brings us on to the focus for this week, which is, of course, the hotly anticipated home game against Wigan. I'm really excited. I can't wait for this particular one, which, of course, goes hand-in-hand with me already deciding that we're going to lose, and probably badly. But, James, how are you feeling about it? You're excited? How do you think the game's going to go?
I just want it to be better than that absolute joke that we went to at their ground.
I'm sure it will be.
But yeah, Wigan, I'll be honest, Wigan have surprised me a bit this season. Like, I figured they'd be a lot better than last season with the cash money injection, but I didn't think they'd be, you know, top of the table or top two with like two games in hand over quite a few of the teams below them. So they've really surprised me on that front. Kind of goes to show that Liam Richardson was probably the mastermind of Paul Cook's era, but there you go. So hopefully we can have the kind of performance that we had against Sunderland, or that but with the goals of Ipswich. You know, it's gonna be a tough game. We're gonna bring in a brilliant following, good for them, and I just want us to play how we play away, but at home. I don't feel like that's too much to ask. I don't know what it is about when we play at home where we either have a really good spell, like we did against Shrewsbury, and then just seem to take our foot off the pedal, or we just don't, or we just fall behind and then kind of have to endure slogging at their goal and just hoping something happens. I don't want it to be that kind of match. So, yeah, I don't know how we'll line up against Wigan. I don't know how we're going to line up against us. I just want it to be an exciting game, and hopefully James McLean doesn't punish Brocky too much, because Brocky had a stinker at their ground, so hopefully it'll be better.
Yeah, I totally echo what you've said there. All we want is for it to be entertaining. If we do lose, so be it, but I don't think we will. I think a home advantage and a decent crowd should hopefully spur us on. Wigan, of course, going into the game in good form. They're only a point off top with two games in hand, though. They're currently sitting third place. They've won two out of their last three. They beat Cheltenham at home and Gillingham away, but lost at home themselves to Sheffield Wednesday in the back end of September. So they're obviously playing well at the minute. They've signed some good players over the course of the summer. But Lee, to finish things off, it's a local derby. Anything can happen. Give us a score prediction.
Well, I'm going to say on the fence, I think, can say 1-1. I think they've got... I'm not actually seeing them play this season. I've seen many highlights of this. I've just been obviously keeping a keen eye on them and what the team's like and stuff. And they've been... You know, they've got a lot of options up top, which we're going to have to keep hold of. keep an eye on, like, Will Keane's scoring a few goals from now, and Wyke's just a bit of, I think he's scoring his first six, and he's got four in his last three. So, you know, he's someone we're going to have to, obviously, we were linked with him under Parky. It looked like we were going to sign him at one point before Bradford got him in. Yeah, I think it was. So, I mean, they've got someone on the bench who I think we all sort of, who's our like a LOV crush in Stephen Humphreys, who we got from Rochdale, obviously. You know, they paid $500,000 for him, I think. So, yeah, it was well beyond what we were able to do. But they've certainly got the firepower to trouble us. It's just whether we can sort of keep the back door shut. And I think we will trouble them going forward ourselves, like we've troubled every side we've played this season. You know, even if we've not scored, we've certainly created the chances. And I think the most encouraging thing about the whole season, really, is pretty much every game we've lost, you could probably say we've not deserved to. So that's a really encouraging sign, isn't it? Let's be honest. And I think, you know, if we do get beat by Wigan, I don't want the fans to sort of...
As long as they don't rip signs off and throw them at people like they did for us today, Chris.
Yeah. I know. I'd just like to introduce you to two things, Lee. One is the internet, and two is Bolton Wanderers fans on the internet. So I think if you're going to be expecting us to respond to any negative performance with calm and moderate reflection, then I think you might end up being disappointed, mate.
True. But I suppose there's always measured people like myself and yourself, isn't there? But yeah, it's just one of those where I'm not expecting us to win, just because I just think that they've got a lot of strings to the bow. But again, I can't profess to have watched them play this season, so I'll be sort of a little bit wet behind the ears with how they sort of approach the game, whether they're expansive or whether they're particularly, you know, sort of direct. But yeah, it should be a cracking atmosphere. I always feel like a derby's better in a night game, like sort of 7:45 evening kickoff. I always sort of feel a bit more up for them, but. It should be a good occasion, and it wouldn't surprise me one bit if we came out on top, because we've certainly got the capability of doing it. But I just worry that maybe we'll miss the chances that we should take to win it, really, and that may well be the case if we persevere with Doyle. But I think, like you both said, I'd be very surprised if he isn't starting, just knowing what it's like, really. But it's a tough one to sort of predict. But I'm going to sit on the fence like Loro used to do, which he always does in his predictions, and just say 1-1. I think it's going to be 1-1.
Go for a Liverpool win. Be a bit more like Lawrence. Yeah, brilliant. Well, I think you boys have both covered everything that I pretty much think about the game. I think I really do hope it's a spectacle. It's been a while, hasn't it, since we had a home game that gets the blood flowing like this one potentially will. And so bring it on, and let's just hope that the boys do what they know how to do, and we can get ourselves the 3 points and keep our momentum going. It would be important after the Sunderland and Wednesday games to find that bit of form again. I'd be really hopeful that Doyle can find his shooting boots. Dasovic can do the same. Dapo can be Dapo, and we can push on. But we'll see. We'll review that game in more detail, obviously, in the next week or two. We'll get another pod out and see how things go. In reflection. So, if there's nothing else to be said, lads, I'm very grateful for your time tonight. It's been too long, so let's not leave it quite so long next time. You can find the podcasts at your usual podcast dispensaries, iTunes, Spotify, etc. Don't forget to leave a review. And the website is lineofvenasweet.com and Twitter handle lineofvenaste. So, without further ado, say goodbye, James.
Goodbye, James.
Say goodbye, Lee.
Goodbye, Lee.
And it's goodbye from me. Insert pithy catchphrase here. Good night.